This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
I'm gonna try my hardest not to cough through this. I've had a massive, like, I've just been coughing my guts up for like the past week and a half, so I'll do my best.
No, you feel free. Feel free to cough your guts up as much as you like, directly into the microphone, preferably. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to this episode 63 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. My name is Tom and I'm joined by an international troupe of Dreamcast, I was going to say experts then, but that might be pushing it a little bit, Dreamcast fans and aficionados. I'm joined, as ever, by my regular co-host, Mike Phelan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tom.
I'm joined as well across the globe by one of our other regular co-hosts. His name is Ross. Hello, Ross.
Hello.
Ross joined by our international correspondent, the squeaky chair, as you can hear. Also joined by another regular co-host. His name is James. Hello, James.
Hello. Do I class as an international?
I suppose technically, you are in Wales, so, you know, it is a technically another country. If, you know, the rumours about the Brexit splits are going to, you know, come true, then, you know, Wales and Scotland could split away and you would truly then be international, yeah. we do have two new hosts, both of whom are going to be writing for the main site and also hopefully regular voices on the podcast. One gentleman is named Lewis. Welcome, Lewis.
Hello.
Would you like to tell everyone who's listening who you are and you know, what you've done in the past?
So, hello, I am Lewis, and I want to say I'm mainly known, but I'm probably not very much known for writing. I have a website called AltMag, and I've been writing all my kind of geeky thoughts on there and hoping people read them. And I think actually, like, it's quite cathartic to get all your thoughts down. So it's really cool to be part of the Dreamcast Junkyard because it's nice to get those thoughts to people who actually care about them. Mm. And yeah, so it's awesome to be on the podcast as well and in the presence of other like-minded fans of this awesome console. Yeah,
excellent.
There you go.
Cool.
It's come full circle for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've known about your site for years, and I've been frequenting it, you know, every now and then to see what new articles have gone up there. So I'm familiar with your work. Excellent. We also have another new co-host and writer for the Junkyard. His name is Mark. Hello, Mark. People might know you as a different name online, but if you'd like to just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, cheers, Tom. So thanks for that. So yeah, so I'm known mainly as kind of Mark from Maz Gaming, which is a YouTube channel dedicated to mainly Sega stuff, mainly retro, so a hell of a lot of Dreamcast bits. So like the initial idea was basically to be just a Dreamcast channel, but then because I was doing it with a friend and he liked to, he kind of was keen to do other things as well, it kind of went from there. But yeah, certainly Sega focused, and the Dreamcast for me has always been my favorite console ever since launch. And I've literally been listening, it's really weird, just, you know, just like Lewis said, kind of come full circle, but I've been reading the site, reading things on the site for almost forever, and then I've been listening to the Dreampod ever since, I think maybe the second or third episode. So it's a little bit surreal to be here now.
Cool. Now, people might know you for a different reason recently for us, a particular console that you actually own. Could you tell us a little bit about that, and then we can take the piss out of you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I'm the guy behind the kind of Dreamcast 2 branded Nintendo Switch that went viral a few weeks ago and caused a bit of a storm. So it's kind of like absolutely two camps. One, people could kind of see the point about the fact that I didn't really want to be using any Nintendo console, so I was kind of turning it into a bit of a Sega thing for myself. And then you had the other side of the coin that was, oh my god, absolute sacrilege. You know, like, this guy needs to be, you know, like needs to be arrested for doing that to her, for all that stuff. Yeah, so it was really odd. It was kind of picked up by Kotaku and Nintendo Life and Eurogamer. And yeah, I got one email from Kotaku that I thought was a wind-up. And then within about 4 hours, the article was up, and then I woke up in the morning and it was like, yeah, the whole thing had just gone like crazy, crazy big. So yeah, it's been really good. We got, you know, the channel got a lot of content, a lot of views from it. But yeah, like I say, not all positive, but I'd say it was probably 70-30 in the positive bit. So yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. Living kind of in the internet age as we do, the way that, you know, something that you do quite innocently for your own entertainment that can literally just turn into something that somebody else finds incredibly offensive for no reason.
I was going to say, Tom, I don't believe that. I don't believe for a moment that the gaming community would make negative comments about anything.
No, it's just a figment of our imaginations. Anyway, we're here to talk about Dreamcasts and, well, other things as well. But we will start the podcast as we always do, and we will talk a little bit about some things that we've played on the current gen systems and some things we've picked up for maybe some other retro systems and the Dreamcast. Mike, I'm going to come to you first. We'll talk a little bit about Play Expo Blackpool in a little while, but yep. What have you been playing on current gen? What have you been playing on the Dreamcast or otherwise?
So, as regular listeners to the podcast will know, I do play a bit of off-road racing games on modern gen consoles, and I've been playing a game called Dakar 18, which is based on the Dakar Rally. It's not very good, but it's one of those games which sort of like has a really really cool concept and really good idea.
I think Ross's chair wanted to ask a question. Then
the chair was asking a question. Yeah,
you don't know how much effort it's taking to not make that chair squeak.
Jesus.
But the it's got a really cool concept of the game, but it's not very well made, so it's a bit of a shame because of it's a very long stage rally basically. I've also been playing, as everyone else probably has, Red Dead Redemption 2, and a couple of other games on modern gens. But well, really the main ones for me pickup wise have been my Neo Geo Mini.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I picked it up.
What's the verdict?
International version.
Shite.
I really like it. I knew Ross would be a. You can rely on Ross to. But no, it's. I understand why it's not everyone's cup of tea. But for me, nice, simple, really, really lovely screen. Really, really nice.
To be fair, Mike, half the Dreamcast collection you have is quote, not everybody's cup of tea. So I don't think that's too much of a barrier.
100%, yeah. but it's a really good little thing. I like it. Don't listen to Ross. And also, we'll talk about Ross. He actually sent me some Dreamcast games as well. So, Ross Ray.
Did you get the magazine as well?
I just received the magazine on Thursday. So it's a bit late, but I got it eventually.
So, what were the games then?
But some amazing stuff from Ross. He found some stuff on Japanese auction sites. So, I've got two more games to my collection, Boulder Force XE and one of the baseball games, and a ton of demo discs from Dreamcast magazine. So, I'm starting to play through some really cool stuff on there. And a magazine which has got a data disc full of VMU data, which is fantastic.
Well, that's good. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
It's...
But if you've noticed, it's because I saw it and I was like, oh, I think I'll load that up and take some of those files. But then I realised it's like still sealed, never been opened. So I was like, oh, can't rip open Mike's magazine.
No, so I haven't opened it myself yet. So, but there's the demo discs. They come from one of the Dreamcast magazines in Japan. And there's tons of videos and some VMU data on them as well, and demos. So it's good fun to look through them. A bit like looking through Dream On discs. I know you've done that as well, Tom, in the past.
Yeah. Excellent. Cool. Okay. Just a quick word on Red Dead Redemption 2. How it doesn't really appeal to me because it looks like, from what I've read, it's a really, really long game. And I play games in like short spurts, so it wouldn't be something that I'd be interested in. But... yeah, I've seen a lot of good feedback about it on, you know, the various games websites and things. What's your verdict?
I haven't played much yet because I was going to play it when I came back from Play Expo, which I know we'll go into in a bit. But I've been working since then, so I only played it 2 days ago, first time.
All right, okay.
No, I really like it. I love Red Dead Redemption 1. I love Red Dead Revolver as well. So it's a really good Western themed game. It looks amazing.
Excellent. Okay, Ross, what about you? Not a Neo Geo, I take it. A Neo Geo, the tabletop thing.
No, not a chance. I've been playing, this weekend, Doom VFR.
Oh, yeah, it's good.
On the Vive. And despite the mixed reviews, I really enjoyed it. It's one of the best-looking VR games I've ever played. It plays very much like Doom 2016 in that you have to continually keep moving. But of course, you're teleporting, so you've got to continuously teleport all over the place. Otherwise, you'll die pretty quickly. It was good game, very short, only 2.5 hours long. Plus, there's like four classic Doom levels that are kind of novel to play. But yeah, not very long. Hard to recommend at the price tag, but I'd pick it up on a sale if you can. Yeah.
Yeah, I found that when I was playing it on the PSVR, the sort of the major issue that I had was actually being able to look around and think. It was only when I decided that, you know, maybe I should stand up and play the game, you know, so I've got full 360 degree movement, it made the game immeasurably better. So if you are listening to this and you've got Doom VFR, try playing it standing up as opposed to sitting down. It completely changes the game. Sorry, Ross, continue.
But yeah, that's pretty much all I've got to say about Doom VFR. Definitely worth checking out if it's at a reasonable price. I think the full RRP is a bit much for 2.5 hours. But yeah, other than that, Tetris Effect came today. Been enjoying that. That's another one, though, that is difficult to justify the price tag. But yeah, if you're a fan of Mizuguchi's games, Res and Lumines and all that, then you'll feel right at home. I mean, it's just classic Tetris, but of course, it's got like very trippy background graphics and music, but then as you're moving the pieces from left to right and plonking them down and rotating them, there's different sound effects and music that you're creating passively while doing that. So yeah, it's really cool, really trippy. I don't have a PSVR, so I can't play it in VR, obviously, but it's very immersive, and I bet it's even better in VR.
Cool. What about retro on the Dreamcast at all?
Oh, retro, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, I've always forgot about that. Yeah, the last about a week ago, I started playing Sega Gaga.
Oh, of course, I finished that yesterday.
Nice. Yeah, I completed it yesterday. But yeah, I mean, it's very different to how I imagined it, to be honest. I think so many people talk about it, but very few people have played it, and especially played it all the way through, or played enough of it to know what it's all about. I mean, it's like one part dungeon crawling RPG with Pokemon elements, where you have to catch these game developers, and then after you've caught them, you take the game developers into a studio, and then it's like kind of like a virtual pet game development studio kind of thing, where you have to keep all your developers happy and make them make a good game. And then it's also one part like visual novel, and it's got a bunch of like really cool mini game, well, not really cool, but it's got some like kind of nice mini games with lots of references to Sega characters and Dreamcast. One thing that I was a bit disappointed about was on your first playthrough, I mean, everyone knows the famous shmup level, right, where they're you fight all the Sega hardware from the SG-1000 up to the Saturn, like this 2D shmup. It's like really famous online. You can't get that on your first playthrough. On your first playthrough, it's really quite difficult to even get enough market share to survive the first 7 chapters. But then to get past the 7th chapter, you have to get 100% market share. So on your first playthrough, I believe it's impossible to get that. And you get to chapter 7, and then you get one of the bad endings, and then with the new save plus, you can start again and go for the 100% and get the remaining chapters plus that shmup part. But yeah, really good game. Visuals and sound are really basic and budget, but there's something really endearing about it, probably partly because of
its name kind of precedes itself, and it's one of those legendary Dreamcast games that hardly anyone's played, but everybody kind of knows about, mainly because of the sort of the special editions and the way that it's almost like a sort of it's kind of like a game within a game. Do you know what I mean? Where you know you are controlling basically you're trying to promote Sega within a game. If I've got that right.
You've got it right. There's a few different like interweaving parts of the story. The main part of the story is that you're working for Sega Gaga, or Sega, and you're trying to gain market share from Dogma, the representing Sony, of course. That's like the main storyline. But then, and that's what most of the visual novel sections are about. But then when you're inside the dungeons are all game studios within Sega. And it's kind of a commentary on how it shares quite a lot of parallels with like these things that are going on now with Rockstar. There's it's become quite a controversial issue with how some of the people have worked there felt they were mistreated and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that Sega ever even gave the game the go-ahead, because it's all a commentary on that, on like how working in the games and industry is like long hours and poor conditions and stuff. And as you go into the Sega studios at the beginning, the very one of the first things your character says is, oh, when, as you come up to these massive big vault-like doors, he's like, oh, these vault doors to keep the secrets inside Sega or keep people out. And the person you're with comments, no, 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 those big vault doors are to keep the game developers in so that they don't escape.
The entire game was, it felt like it was a bunch of developers who just were tired and sort of had so much bad times in the last few years, they just wanted to get all that frustration out and make it into a game. That's what I felt anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And it's unbelievable. Sega, probably just Sega was so desperate at the time. They were like, just like, fuck it, go ahead and make it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. And like in between each chapter, there's these like little puppet shows. It's like so cheaply made. Like there's two guys hid behind the sign outside Sega headquarters in Tokyo, in Haneda. I've actually been there and been to that sign. And they're doing this puppet show with these two characters. One's like a little girl and one's some kind of dinosaur or something. I don't know. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the game. It's just at the end of a chapter, there's this little interlude where they ask questions about the game industry. And after you complete the game, the very last one, the dinosaur says to the little girl, big sister, why isn't the Dreamcast selling too well? And the sister says, oh, well, that's because... And then it cuts out and goes, and that's the end of the game.
Wow. Great. That's brilliant.
But yeah, cool game. Excellent game.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Let's move on to James. James, what have you been doing? I know you've been doing a lot of racing in your souped-up Clio. is it a Clio?
I've been doing a lot of real racing, not so much simulation stuff. No, gaming-wise, Retro Dreamcast, I actually picked up a game I've never owned. Talking to demos earlier, I played a lot of this demo. I think it was one of the first games I actually played on a Dreamcast demo unit in like Odeon Cinemas or something, but Ready to Rumble. Always loved the demo, played it like loads and loads of times, and just never ever bought the full game. And it was, I was in my local CEX, and they seem to have a load of Dreamcast stuff recently. And every time I go in there, they seem to have like a stack of like 6 or 10 different games. But anyway, it was £2.50, so I was like, well, I'm not going to leave it here for £2.50. So bought that, haven't played it yet, but we'll probably get to play through that at some point. I got my DreamPi updated with the latest firmware and stuff, because they've added a load of new titles. We discussed it a couple of DreamPods ago, so just been doing a bit more online gaming again with some of the guys. There's a regular session that runs on a Sunday night, which I normally take part in, but we play quite a bit of Worms World Party, which is still such a good game. Obviously a pretty timeless series and still looks fantastic as well. Just enjoying a bit of old online gaming, which still makes me smile just sitting down playing a Dreamcast online with a keyboard in 2018 every time we connect. And retro wise the only other thing for me is I got, as much as I love the Dreamcast and as much as the Dreamcast will always be probably my favorite ever console, before the Dreamcast came along, the PlayStation, the original PlayStation, was very much kind of the console that kind of got me into, or I would say turned me into a hardcore gamer, if that makes any sense. I mean, I'd always played games before. I played Mega Drive and SNES and everything else, but it was the PlayStation was the first kind of console where I started, you know, looking forward to games when they were coming out, reading magazines about, and so on and so forth. And it was the announcement of the PlayStation Classic that just kind of got me a bit feeling nostalgic. And I dug the PS2 down and a load of my old PS1 games and spent the entire evening playing Rallycross, which I know me and you have had a conversation about before, Tom, which was one of my favorite games back in the day. Such an interesting take, an unique take, which on sort of the semi-realistic racing, I guess you'd call it. But yeah, really enjoyed playing through that, and I was a bit disappointed in the end that game wasn't actually announced as one of the 20 games on the PS Classic.
Yeah, it's an interesting lineup of games, isn't it? I know a lot of people have said that it's quite disappointing, but I mean, with licensing and that kind of thing, and with only 20 games, you know, you're gonna have to like miss some things, and
I think it's worth it for me. Just purely for the freaking box it comes in, just because it obviously mimics the original box. But I think it's, you know, they managed to put Metal Gear Solid on it and Destruction Derby, which are two of my favorite games, you know, growing up, so it's probably worth a purchase for that alone. But I think they, unlike the Nintendo ones, obviously a lot of their kind of key IP games, things like Gran Turismo, they'd never get away with because of all the licensing agreements in it, as you said. Tony Hawk is another one that everyone talks about when they talk about PlayStation, but again, all the licensing for all the music in that, it just wasn't possible. So still looking forward to it. And then on contemporary stuff, I think, Mike, you were very, very diplomatic about Dakar 18. I think it was one of the worst games I've played on current gen stuff, to be honest. I got sent a review key at that, and I hope you didn't pay full price for it, Mike, is all I'll say on the matter.
Is it just broken? Is it just janky or what? Is that the issue?
It's a bit of both. It's just awful. Is my one word review on it. More interesting, though, and kind of tenuously linked to Dreamcast here, is a game that's been out for a little while called Railway Empire. Okay. And it was something I had on my wish list for a while, and I just didn't want to pay full price for it. And I picked it up for about 12 quid, I think. But I used to love Railroad Tycoon on the Dreamcast. It was one of the games I played all the time. And basically, Railway Empire is Railroad Tycoon on modern system. So that's kept me interested for a fair few hours. And the only other two things there, Forza Horizon 4. I don't know if any of you boys played that, but it's just
I've played that a lot.
Yeah. Probably one of the best racing games I've ever played in my life. So I've been pouring hours into that since it came out. And my Destiny game time continues to grow as the new expansion came out a couple months ago. So I think I'm up to like 1,200 hours in Destiny 2 now.
Wow.
and counting. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's pretty much
good mix there. Okay, let's move on to our new hosts. Lewis, what have you been doing?
So, as always, I've just been playing Overwatch constantly. I'm obsessed with like the competitive mode, even though sometimes it's painful. But other than that, because usually if I come home, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to play this game. Usually I just end up playing Overwatch, which is bad of me because I've got so many good things I can play as well. And one of these is Gravity Rush 2, I kind of missed upon its launch, but I went to Affleck's Palace in Manchester, and there was a really cool Gravity Rush 2 poster on sale, and I played the first one, but I liked the poster, so I bought it. But then I thought, I don't want to look like a poser, so I'll actually buy the game. And so I bought the game, and it just makes the first game look like a tech demo. Like, it's just the graphics and the world and the size of the world that you can just fly around in is just amazing. Actually, the story is really deep as well, and actually gets quite serious at times. Like, the first one kind of had like a cool story, but I think the second one really kind of goes quite deep with what it's trying to achieve. And it's just a shame that you know, it's kind of, the second game's limited by the fact that, you know, people want to be playing the first one first in order to kind of be up to date on the story. But I mean, if it didn't have that barrier to entry, I would just say ignore the first one and just play the second, and you'll be amazed by like what it has on offer.
It's an interesting game, that Gravity Rush 2, because when it was launched, it kind of got lost, didn't it? I don't remember what other games came out around the same time, but I remember knowing about it because I played the first one on the Vita. It was one of my favourite games on the Vita. I thought it was amazing. And then it's almost like there's a certain category of games on the PS, on the PlayStation 4, which are like billed as these kind of marquee games, and then again they get lost and nobody ever talks about them ever again. Things like Tearaway Unfolded, an amazing game, PS4 exclusive, that very few people talk about anymore. But I think
It's originally on Vita, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you not play it on Vita?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, played it on Vita. Yeah, Gravity.
I don't know how it worked, but I felt like that game, it it used every single feature of the Vita. Like in it used a camera. Mm. So in the cutscenes, when it showed the sun god, it was
your
showing
face,
your
yeah.
character and yeah, and all this stuff. I wondered how well it translated to PS4. But
well, with the PS4,
I think all that stuff was lost.
I mean, you get to use the controller, you know, the light on the controller, you can use that as a torch to, like, sort of move the controller around, and it would direct onto the screen where you're pointing the controller. It's pretty ingenious.
What about on the Vita where you touch the back of it and use your fingers to jump and to push things out of the ground and stuff?
There's use of the touchpad on the controller, so there is a little bit of that. It's not as good as it was on the Vita with the back controls and the touch.
Is it a different, completely different game, though? Or has it just been, like...
Yeah, it's a different game. Totally different
edited
game.
It's a completely different game? So,
it's obviously in the same...
I thought they'd somehow ported it and changed some of the features.
It's also made of paper and everything, but it's a different game. Anyway, sorry.
Let's get that.
Please continue.
So if you've played the first Gravity Rush, but even if you haven't, maybe just, like, look up the sort of the plot on the first game and just catch up and then just start with the second. And there's actually this, like, really kind of emphasis on the world that you visit. You kind of start out on this kind of island in the sky, and it's very beautiful and colorful and thriving with life, and it's kind of very nice. But then actually you find out through playing that as you go lower and lower towards kind of like the gravity vortex that's like below all of these islands, that as the islands go down, they get the conditions of the living of the people get worse and worse. And actually the people who are closest to the gravity vortex are actually like living in absolutely horrible conditions. And basically it's this, the main character kind of struggles with, you know, wanting to kind of help her friends who she knows, you know, on the top, and then, you know, do the odd jobs for them. And then she kind of goes against kind of the government. It's actually quite a deep game. Even if you played the first one, it's not that deep, but then you go on to this and you're thinking, wow, they really like upped the story here. So,
yeah.
Other than that, I also grabbed Clannad for the PS4. I wrote an article on the Junkyard about visual novels, and I mentioned Clannad, but they released that on the PS4, and it actually has an English option in the Japanese version, which is amazing. So
is
I can actually, yeah.
Okay, wow.
So it's actually the NTSCJ version, but it actually has English text. I just want to say well done to Mike for going through all of the visual novels on the Dreamcast and actually writing quite nice reviews of them. I appreciate that there's a few people out there actually like love this kind of crap genre of games. They're not even games, let's face it, but
I found it interesting that a game like Clannad on the PS4 is basically it's technically exactly the same game as the one that's on the Dreamcast. Is that correct?
Sorry, no. Clannad wasn't on the Dreamcast.
I apologize.
The earlier games by the same company were, which is why I brought it out in the article. other than that, like retro stuff, I was playing a lot of Saturn. I got the pseudo Saturn kind of hack for the Action Replay, which allows you to play burnt games. And so I was playing a lot of the more expensive ones that I can't ever afford. So I was playing KO Flying Squadron 2 and Burning Rangers, which doesn't look the best nowadays, shall we say, but it's still kind of interesting as a game. And then I played Sonic Adventure 2 The Trial, because apparently I own it, so I was like, what is this? And has anyone ever played that kind of demo disc of Sonic Adventure 2?
Star Online.
Yeah, you're right, it was,
I was thinking about writing an article about it, but then I realized that I don't really know what the comparisons I don't think are that different to the actual finished game, so.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter, because all you got to do is, it's the clickbait, see? It's like, you won't believe what the differences are. You get 1,000 people to click it, and then happy days.
Yeah, it was also weird to hear Sonic speak in Japanese. Obviously, I'm used to this kind of cool dude sort of English voice he had, you know, when he kind of came onto the Dreamcast. So it was weird hearing actually the dialogue in Japanese for once. So yeah, weird kind of little oddity that I found. I was playing Phantasy Star and I didn't even realize that it had this disc in the back. I guess I never looked, so oh well. That's cool. It for me though.
So what was that with the first version of Phantasy Star then? Because the version 2 didn't have that disc from my memory anyway.
Yeah, I've just got the original.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
The non-version 2. Yeah.
Cool.
I've actually got version 2 to hand. Give me a sec.
I know, it'll be Dream Key 2.0.
Oh, yeah, it's Dream Key 3 in the back of this one.
Oh, 3.
There's a sticker on the front of the box as well. I knew there was something in the back of it, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Mark, I know it feels like it's probably been a lifetime waiting to speak about what you've been playing. But to be honest, I'm not really bothered, so I'm just going to talk to Mark. I'm going to talk instead. No, I'm joking. Mark, what have you been playing and what have you picked up?
So nothing really for modern consoles recently. There's nothing really coming out on Switch that's really grabbed me. I don't own a PS4, I don't own an Xbox, although I kind of wish I did, purely for Red Dead at the moment, because everyone's going on about how good it is. In terms of Dreamcast, I made the really stupid decision of deciding that I wanted a full PAL set for Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of all over eBay and Amazon and picking bits up, and then weirdly, about 2 days after I decided that, a friend of mine on Facebook said he was getting rid of his entire Dreamcast collection because he wanted to concentrate on getting a full PAL Mega Drive collection. So I started off by buying like 10 games off him, and then he kept coming back to me going, oh, you know, if you want another 10, then I'll do you a deal. So in the end, I picked up 45 games over the course of about 3 days, which I've definitely not told the missus how much I paid for all those. But, but like, you know, a lot of it is filler. I'll be really honest with you. Like, a lot of it's like, you know, like the NFL games that I've no intention of playing. Spirit of Speed was in there that I finally picked up now.
Oh, you've got to play that. It's a brilliant game.
Put it in the console.
Yeah.
Put it in the console.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I've actually played that before, and then I played it at a friend's house, and I think we both just kind of stared at the screen in disgust and assumed that we'd had a broken disc. Other than that, I've not played much Dreamcast stuff because another member of the Dream Pod actually has my Dreamcast wires at the moment. So
is that me?
Yeah, here's you, mate.
I knew I had some wires from other people, but I wasn't sure. Sorry, I'll get them sent back to you. You should have nudged me. I didn't realise. Sorry.
It's all right. Although obviously I did play a lot at Play Expo Blackpool, which I know is coming up very shortly, and also I, in terms of what I'm actually playing right now, so I picked up a Sega Nomad at Blackpool.
I knew you'd buy that. I knew it because you were coming.
You know what? Like, I was, yeah, as soon as I saw it, I knew I was going to have it. I was just trying to kind of make a big deal out of it, you know, about whether or not I would or I wouldn't. Just wondering, you know, whether I could haggle the price down. I've loved that. I've basically just been playing Shining Force 2 on that. So yeah, loving that. But other than that, mate, yeah, it's been a bit. I've not played a lot, but I've picked up a lot recently.
Excellent. Yeah, 45 games. That's quite the chunk of the Dreamcast library. Excellent. Good stuff. I'll just quickly rattle through what I've been doing. I've not picked anything up because, as I'm sure that you guys are aware, I don't know if the people listening are going to be aware, I'm actually trying to downsize my collection. I will be selling a lot of it off at Bristol Gaming Market, which is coming up in about a week's time. So if you want some Dreamcast bargains, then get yourself down there because I'll be selling a lot of my games off. In terms of current gen stuff, I've been playing a lot of FIFA 19. My dad actually went and bought himself a PlayStation 4, and it came with FIFA, and he doesn't have any interest in FIFA, so he sort of just gave it to me, so I've been playing through that. Interesting that Mike and James have been talking about this Dakar game, because I've been playing one that's quite similar, but it's called Baja, or Badger, which is kind of where you race through the Mexican desert in the States. It's actually quite good. It's a remaster, if you will, of a PS3 game, but it's actually quite well done. Doesn't quite look up to the spec of a native kind of PS4 release, but it's still quite good fun. It's one of them games you can just kind of play while you're listening to a podcast or a YouTube video or something with the sound down. So yeah, that's been quite good. I've also been playing quite a lot, weirdly, on the Vita. I stopped playing my Vita and I didn't touch it for about 8 or 9 months because I just didn't have any new games for it, and I wasn't really bothered about playing it because I had the Switch as well at the time. When I got rid of the Switch, I found the Vita in a drawer, completely dead, battery, charged it up. And then since then, I've just kind of been going through some of the old games that I never really played before. So things like Virtua Tennis 4 is fantastic on the Vita. I also started playing the Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, which I had from PS Plus from years ago when it was a PS Plus release, and never really put much time into it, but kind of rediscovered it this last week and just been really getting into that and getting all the sort of opening up all the new tracks. Some fantastic fan service, referencing old Sega games and different franchises. It's really good. A lot of detail as well in those worlds that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect. Certainly in the there's one stage which is set in the Nights into Dreams universe, and it's just the way it kind of captures the magic of the Saturn game. It's just really well done, even to the point where it's kind of referencing like boss fights that people probably, a lot of gamers, younger gamers who never really played on a Saturn, for example, they wouldn't really know what these like references are. But because I had a Saturn back in the day and I played Knights to death, then I recognise all the little references. And I was like, that's a really nice touch. It's great fan service, that. And so, yeah, it'd be good if they could, like, you know, release another one of those games on current gen systems. That'd be really cool. And somebody said it'd be really good on the Switch as well, which I think it probably would be. It'd get rid of some of the frame rate issues anyway from the Vita version.
They didn't add Ryo Hazuki as a downloadable character in the PS3 version, though, did they? That was the only thing that bummed me. Yeah, like, that sucked. Like, I remember I got the game and I was like, oh man, I can't wait to get Ryo Hazuki. And then I found out that you can only get him on PC. So,
that is so strange. That's really weird.
And they are releasing a new Sonic Racing game, aren't they? But it feels like a step backward in that it's just the Sonic
games.
Characters. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Sonic fan, but I mean, there's only about four or five characters in that universe I give a shit about. I don't need a whole game full of Sonic's friends.
By all accounts, it's not very good either, from what I've been told from people who played it. So,
well, it's not finished yet, but yeah, it looks like it's heading that way. Yeah.
It's been shame. Delayed, isn't it?
Yeah. On the Dreamcast front, I've been playing quite a lot of Dreamcast games because I've been doing these comparison videos for the DC HDMI, which we'll talk about in a little while. But one of the games that I did start playing to record some footage and ended up sitting and playing for ages was Guilty Gear X. It's a fantastic 2D fighting game. It's probably, with it alongside Marvel vs. Capcom 2, it's probably my favourite 2D sprite-based fighting game on the Dreamcast. It just looks amazing. It plays really well, and I just love the sort of the style. It's got attitude. It's got tude, as you might say in the late 90s. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of Guilty Gear X. So yeah. However, that's enough about what we've been playing. We've been talking about it for 40 minutes nearly. So if you're still with us, congratulations. But we're now going to move into some more specific Dreamcast related stuff. Before we do get into the meat of that, though, just a little bit of a chat about what we did at Play Expo Blackpool a couple of weeks ago now. Me, myself, and Mike, we went up there. We took a long old drive, didn't we, Mike, up to Blackpool?
We did indeed.
It took me 10 and a half hours to drive from Southampton to via Bristol to pick Mike up to Blackpool, and that was quite ridiculous because it took Adam Korolik less time to get from Chicago to London and then to Blackpool. So that's that just shows how bad traffic can be at certain times of the week and day. But yeah, it was a really good event. Same old kind of setup. We were in the Norbrecht Castle Hotel Exhibition Centre in Blackpool. And there were, you know, thousands of people walking about, coming and checking out the Dreamcast. Had some good chats with, obviously, yourself, Mark. And you were there with some of the other guys from the YouTube community. And it was just really cool to sort of meet up with everyone. For me, I think, even though it's all about like the games and that kind of thing, it's also meeting up with people and chatting to people about, you know, their interests, and, you know, people who maybe never even played on a Dreamcast come up and say, oh, what's this all about? And you can kind of give them a little bit of a crash course in Dreamcast and you know, the sort of the best games in the library. Also wanted to give a special mention to a guy called Quang, who runs Asobi Tech. He does a lot of events, but he kindly borrowed several really cool items to us to put on our display, first of which was the Divers 2000, which I've never actually seen one in the flesh or the plastic, as it were. It's really cool. I did know that you can't actually activate the Dreamcast side of things without the remote control, so it was good that he also had that included in the box. And a couple of Dreamcasts as well, which drew some curious gazes from people who've never seen a Dreamcast. So yeah, thanks to him for those. And overall, it was a really good event. If you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll note that the last one that we uploaded was episode 62, and that was actually a recording of the panel that myself and Mike sat on, along with Mark from DJ Slope's Games Room, and Adam Korolik, where we took some questions from the audience. I believe, Mark, your dulcet tones were on that recording as well. So this is actually a second appearance on the Dream Pod, not your first. But that was really cool.
Because I just thought it was quite funny, because it's one of those events where everyone's always scared to ask the first question. So, you know, as soon as you said any questions and no one said anything, I was like, okay, you know, I better step up here, come on.
To be honest, from being on the other side of it, being on a panel, I've never been on a panel before. It's quite easy just doing a podcast like this, where you kind of sat in a room with nobody else around you. But when you sat in front of an audience of like maybe 50 or 60 people or however many it was, I was absolutely bricking it. Do you know what I mean? I know it didn't come across in a video that I was, but I was like really nervous.
He was, seriously.
I mean, Adam was really like cool customer, like he always is. But you know, and he said, "I'll just relax and it'd be great." And it was. So yeah, it was really cool to actually sit on a panel and be able to chat with Adam about stuff, you know, away from the panel as well. Overall, a really good event. And I just want to say thanks to you, Mike, as well, for your kind of efforts and hard work helping me run running the Dreamcast Junkyard display area, because we had about 30 consoles in the end, didn't we?
It was really good. It was good to see all the people playing games. We were pretty much packed from the time we opened to the time we closed. So
fantastic event. And sorry, go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, just a couple of things. Because that was my first big retro event. I've been to EGX and stuff like that, but in terms of the retro stuff, like, I was blown away by it. And I think, like, especially the Dreamcast Junkyard area was very, very good. And the only things I will say is some of the traders in there. So I think I actually said to you, Tom, that someone was trying to sell Shenmue 1 for 85 quid. It's just like, in what world do you think that's reasonable? And also the Norbert Castle Hotel. I mean, maybe a grandiose term. It is.
It's a shithole. Castle
Hotel, my God. Luckily I backed out of staying there about a week before and reboxed into a hotel. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard some bright horror stories about that place. About, you know, it's just really dowdy, isn't it? And like, there's like wallpaper peeling off, and just like points in the lobby where a phone used to be, where it's just kind of been ripped off the wall, and there's like a wire hanging out where it used to be, and someone's just like painted around it. It's just like, wow.
I will say one thing about Blackpool. It's a fantastic event. It was great to see so many Dreamcast fans. If you go on Twitter, anyone listening to this podcast, there is a video of our beloved leader Tom dancing.
On the Saturday night.
It's a very interesting video. I'm not entirely sure what he's trying to do, but he has some rhythm, and it's pretty good. He was a little bit drunk, which is fine. We got back to the hotel without any problems. It features Adam Buchanan from Retro Collect and Tom doing some incredibly weird moves.
You need to put that up on Twitter, Mike, with a caption: "You'll never believe what the leader of the Dreamcast Junkyard gets."
I'm quite taken aback that you're calling me a leader in the first place. So Play Blackpool was great, and here's to many more play events in the future.
Yes.
Okay, right, let's move on to the first sort of major point at 42 minutes into the podcast. We want to talk a little bit about the DCHDMI. I'm sure you've seen that. If you're a regular visitor to the blog, I've put up several posts about this now, and I'm quite frankly blown away by it. I think a lot of people are blown away by it as well at Play Expo Blackpool, because we did have it on the big TV set up with a couple of games that really show off the Dreamcast kind of graphical power, things like Tokyo Highway Challenge 2.
Yes.
And the crispness of this image is fantastic. Yeah, the videos I put up online and on YouTube, they don't really do it justice. You have to see it on a screen in front of you, like kind of with the naked eye. It's not going off like stuff that you see on the internet. It's been through so many different kind of processes of, you know, editing and then re-uploading and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't really show you how good it looks in reality. So just please believe me how amazing it looks. Compared to these other cables that are out at the moment, these like from Pound and I think B-Hard Bros and I think Hyperkin have got one kind of coming on the way as well. Basically, all they do is take the VGA signal from the Dreamcast 480p, put it out through an HDMI cable and then you put it on a TV that has an HDMI connection. What the DC HDMI is, it's an internal mod, sits underneath the main board on the Dreamcast. It's wired directly to the GPU. So there's no analog interference. It's taking a digital signal directly from the Dreamcast's sort of graphics output and putting it out in basically, you know, super crisp. The highest resolution it can do is 1080p, but it's kind of 960 sort of bordered. It's a phenomenal piece of work by his name is Dan and Chris, but they go by Citrus 3000 PSI and Chris 2600 online. These are the same guys who did the Wii boards. They're putting out sort of really good crisp images on the Wii, the original Wii, and it's just a really, really cool mod, and hopefully when it launches for your pre-order, it'll be a roaring success that it deserves to be. I've never seen Dreamcast games look this good, to be honest. I know there's things like what's it called, the thing that you've got, Ross? The thing, does the upscaling...
FrameMeister, the OSSC?
Well, any one of those, really, take your pick. Even without one of those. So, but Ross, I know you wanted to talk about this, so please.
My big question is, I've tried FrameMeister, OSSC, Acura, and combinations of them. Mm-hmm. And if you use just the Acura or just the OSSC, on every TV I've tried at least, you get this dotty image where if you look closely, it's like the whole image is made up of these dots.
Yes, yeah. I know exactly.
Not like a pixel. And some people call it dithering, but I'm not sure I buy that, because my understanding of what dithering is, for example, on the Mega Drive, when the color palette was limited, they'd use a checkerboard effect. Yeah, yeah. And on a CRT that isn't so sharp, like compared to HDTVs nowadays, it would give the illusion that the Mega Drive was putting out these colours it couldn't do, or transparency effects and stuff like that. And that's not so. People call it dithering on Dreamcast. Maybe dithering can mean that, and it's just I'm ignorant of that. But I don't know what to call it. But it's this horrible dotty image, yeah. And if I put it through the FrameMeister, I don't get that. If I put it into my Sega 480p VGA monitor, you don't see that. And I was wondering about the what's it called, the
DC HDMI.
DC HDMI. I was wondering if you get up close, if it's the same deal as the OSSC.
It's interesting. If I put it onto my 4K TV, there is a slight sort of, you can see it if you get really, really close. If I put it onto the 1080p flat screen that I've got, you can't see it at all. So I don't know if it's something to do with the TV, the resolution of the TV.
Whereas on that same 1080p television, if you use the Acura,
you can see it. Yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah. So there is an improvement there as well. I mean, you can see it straight from the off. When you turn the thing on, the Dreamcast world comes up, you're like, bam, that is super sharp. Wow. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it is on with the other things.
The thing is, it's very difficult to tell in captured footage as well. Like, I've seen captured footage using the OSSC and the Acura, and you can't see it at all, this dotty image I'm talking about. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think you're fighting an uphill battle trying to explain to people online using the tools that we have at our disposal why it's so good. You have to see it. Mike, I know you saw it for the first time at Play Blackpool. I mean, you said it looked amazing to me. You were like, wow. You know.
Well, we had a couple of Dreamcasts with the HDMI cables on, didn't we? Online the other side, and you could see it was slightly, you got up close, you could see it was slightly, as Ross said, dotty. The DC HDMI is crystal clear, it's perfect. Really, we were playing Tokyo Highway Challenge 2, and the lighting and the effects on the cars was as good quality as a 360 game.
Yeah, totally. Mm. It was amazing. I remember walking back from, I think I was going to the bar or something. I was walking back.
Probably.
I was walking back.
Standard.
Find out what it does when the lights go out.
I was staggering back from the bar to the Dreamcast Junkyard section through the crowd. And because we had that big TV on, that big HD TV on our stand, I could see somebody playing Tokyo Highway Challenge from, you know, a distance. And it just looked amazing, even from so far away. I was like, wow, that is super sharp. And it just got better and better as I got closer. So yeah, it's definitely something that I would recommend people check out. This mod the way that it works is that you send your Dreamcast to Chris and he will install it for you. I don't know if he's actually offering like a kit or anything so far, but then he installs it.
Price?
That's the next thing I'm getting on to. The price so far is $150. Now, obviously, $150 is a lot of money. you know, and the difference between $150 and like maybe $30 for one of these cables. If you're not that bothered, if you, all you want to do is plug your telly, your Dreamcast into a telly and play a game, boom, it's on the telly. You're not really that bothered, as long as you can see what you're doing. Then by all means, get a Pound, get the Gecko, get the Acura. Any one of these devices work just fine. They're perfect. You know, they do the job well. If you're an aficionado who wants to get the very best out of your Dreamcast and also want to see what it can do, then I would, you know, wholeheartedly recommend the DC-HDMI. It's a fantastic modification. And look, this thing has been in development for quite some time. It's a really, really well-made piece of kit. You know, it's got an FPGA on there. It's wired directly into the GPU. They're not messing about, these guys. It's not a little kind of side project that they've just been doing in their spare time. They've been working on this full-time for quite some time now. And you can tell it's phenomenal what it does.
I mean, that's fairly expensive, but it's not unreasonable for the amount of development hours they must have put into that, the limited audience of people that are going to buy it, and he's going to mod the console for you. It's not unreasonable, but yeah, it is expensive.
I mean, I've not really even spoken about a lot of the other things that it can do. I mean, the thing's got a Wi-Fi adapter built into it, so you can access the menu from within the Dreamcast OS, you know, when you set it on with no game in it. And you can connect it to your Wi-Fi in your house, and it can download over Wi-Fi the updates that they release every now and then.
Right.
It's got accurate kind of reproduction of the full sort of aspect ratio of the 480p image that the Dreamcast puts out through VGA. Chris was explaining this to me. He's a lot more knowledgeable than I am about this, so if I get this wrong, please, you know, forgive me. But from what I can gather, these things that are taking the VGA signal, the Acura, the Gecko, etc., they don't use the full sort of width of the screen, so they kind of squash it slightly. So he described it as circles become slight ovals.
What it is is the original output of a Dreamcast isn't just standard 480p. It's slightly wider for whatever reason. And if you just feed that directly into a TV without altering it, then the TV will automatically fit that. So, but it is 480p. The area of the screen that displays an image is 480p, but there's these borders that the Dreamcast adds for some reason that are always blank. They're either white at startup or black while you're playing a game. And so basically if you feed that image into most modern TVs, they will just try to adjust that so they fit the whole image, including the borders that aren't used, onto your screen. And of course that the image that what the resulting image is that it's squashed.
Yes.
And yes, it will make like stuff oval instead of spherical. Exactly. Or it'll be slightly too skinny.
Totally.
Like cars will look too boxy or whatever. Yeah.
At some point we will get Dan on the podcast to explain, maybe when it's kind of fully out and people have got them in their sort of collections and have actually had the chance to try and play it and use it. We will get Dan on and he can explain it sort of in more technical speak without us kind of butchering it and sort of getting things wrong. From, you know, my point of view, I think it's an amazing achievement, and to have Dreamcast games looking this good on modern TVs is, you know, far and above what you would expect from a retro system. Brilliant piece of kit. Great stuff. What else can I say? If nobody else has got anything else to add on that topic, I think we should move on to the next. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Sega Shop has launched in the UK and Europe. I have purchased one of the hats, you know, the bobble hats. And one of those T-shirts with the sort of the different coloured sleeves with the Dreamcast sign in the middle. Has anyone else bought anything?
Oh, I got that. I got that one too.
Yeah, so I got that as well.
Should all wear it together for the next meetup.
So people who don't know, basically Sega has had a store in, I think there's one in Japan and one in the States, and we've not really had one sort of for European customers prior to this. So it's quite cool. And one of the differences that I've noticed is that there's a lot more sort of specific Dreamcast branded stuff on the European sites than there are on the United States site. So a lot of people have been commenting saying, "Oh, you guys in Europe always get the best thing." And like, well, no, you've had a store, you know, for about a year now. Ross, you said there's a store in Japan. Is that right?
Yeah, I've bought a few things from the store in Japan. I've got a Dreamcast mug, a coaster, a fridge magnet. Those Sega hardware calendars.
Oh, is that where they came from?
Yeah, they came from there, yeah. I've got a Sonic tin pencil case. it's got like Green Hill Zone on the front. From there, you stick it. Yeah, I've got a load of shit. It's actually Dreamcast. Sorry, the Japanese store at least is actually really quite reasonable though. Like
it's the same as the UK one. I was just going to say the prices case, are really good.
Oh, is it exactly the same? Because the pencil case I bought was like a fiver or something like that. It's really cheap.
And then the t-shirts were like 12 quid, which, you know, again, is you most of these things are like 18 quid if you look at Insert Coin and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's so I thought it was pretty good.
I think that they're made by a company called Numbskull, and like,
yeah.
I've actually bought. I think they had. I found it was in game once. They had this notebook that was shaped like the Dreamcast. I don't know if you've ever seen those before.
Yes.
That was like really good. I was really impressed by their kind of attention to detail, like on the actual notebook itself, but inside all the little Dreamcast logos and stuff. And yeah. I get this impression they actually like really kind of, if you look at any of their other merch, regardless of whether or not it's Sega, you get this impression that the people who make it actually know what they're making merch for, which is why I really love what they put on the Sega store, like especially the bobble hat. I think the bobble hat's the winner in my eyes, and I'm definitely going to get one. But I just want to say the t-shirts as well, like, if you look at them, you're just thinking, yeah, like this feels like, you know, an official Dreamcast thing. And I just want to say it is a million times better than those horrid shirts they put out in Urban Outfitters with like the Japanese text and the European blue swirl. Like, that upset me so much. That.
I don't know if you boys looked at the Sonic collection on there as well, but there was some of the t-shirts that they've got in the Sonic collection are really nice. But the best thing was the Sonic socks that look like his red shoe. So he's got like his red shoe with like a little white band at the top, and then the top of the sock is like blue.
I've got a pair of them as well.
It looks awesome.
There's also a pair of socks, maybe the same guys, but it's for some reason, it's actually right in front of me right now. The actual dirty sock itself. the bottom part of the sock is like checkered, like Green Hill Zone. And then there's like a little stripe above that that's green and then blue for the sky. And it just so happens I have a tattoo of Sonic the Hedgehog on my leg. And when I wear these socks, it looks like he's running across Green Hill Zone. So I was particularly happy with him.
You have a tattoo of Sonic on your leg?
They're looking at Mankey now. Like, yes, yes.
Just a heads up for people in the UK as well, though, not to disparage Sega shop, but there's actually a pack of four Sonic socks in Tesco's at the current time, which has the exact same sock we're talking about with the checkered effect. It has a Dr. Robotnik one, and it has Sonic shoes as well. A pack of four for like £5.
Ooh, maybe that's where I got mine from. I can't even remember where I got mine from now. Maybe that's the pair I got.
I got like four sets because, you know, you can never have too many Sonic socks.
I'm waiting for Christmas, so when this hat turns up, this bobble hat with Dreamcast written on it, I can wear it with a nice ensemble piece. I've got my PlayStation Christmas jumper, so I can really kind of mix the brands. You know what I mean? And confuse people.
Ooh.
Oh, is he a PlayStation fan or a Dreamcast fan? Which one is he? You know, keep him guessing. Keep him guessing. You know.
You bad man.
The Yakuza merch was really cool as well.
Yeah,
nice. The Yakuza really nice. Stuff. Really good.
They had Yakuza aftershave in Japan a few years ago. Yakuza branded aftershave. Yeah.
What does that smell of?
Fear.
I didn't buy it. Yeah.
Corruption.
Yeah.
I mean, it just smelled like aftershave to me, but yeah.
Yeah, well. I've just actually been on the Sega shop just having a quick look at, because I ordered quite a few Dreamcast bits as well, and the Sega Swirl t-shirt and the mug are now out of stock. So yeah, clearly, you know, people have been on there and kind of, you know, exactly the same force as us, that it is very, very nice merch as merch goes. So
maybe we should give the address out as well. It's segashop.co.uk or segashop.eu for the European version. But yeah, it's looking good from my point of view.
So you mentioned obviously that the US shop's been around for a while. Did anyone else get the Sonic Toaster a couple of months ago?
No.
Anyone get that?
Have you got it?
So Yes, I ordered it because it was the only thing on the Sega America shop, which they actually, because basically they said that they needed to get 1,000 pre-orders in order to make it happen.
Right.
And it was on like 800. And because like, loads of UK fans were saying to them on Twitter, look, you know, I do want to buy this, but you've set it so that it's US only shipping. So for the last 2 days, they opened it up worldwide and that's like, I got one. But then a friend of mine got his and he made a video on it on YouTube and he plugged it in even with an adapter. You know, like a US to UK adapter box thing. Mm. And it just starts smoking, like, even though there's nothing in it. And then his adapter started smoking. And then
did he just use an adapter, or did he use a step-down converter?
No, yeah. So it was like a full-on step-down converter that he said he'd used specifically for quite a few things. Like, the step-down converter just started, like, almost melting smoke coming out of it. So he unplugged it and was like, well, gonna leave that then. So, yes.
It's probably powered by all the leftover components of all the Dreamcast they could never sell that were sitting on pallets in warehouses somewhere.
Maybe you're meant to plug it in and it kind of explodes into a ball of flame and then you're meant to just like hold bread over it as it burns. That's how it works.
to be fair, because I'd actually ordered a step-down converter online and then I saw his video, so it was kind of like, you know, the canary down the mine shaft. Like, I saw him do it and now I'm like, actually, I'm all right. I'm just going to leave it in the box.
Put it on the shelf, leave it. Don't, under no circumstances, try and use it.
Oh, wicked. Whack it on eBay with a use at your own risk warning in the description and just make a bank out of it, you know.
Okay, cool. So yeah, that's the Sega shop. Check it out if you want some decent looking merch. Next on our agenda, I don't know if any of you guys saw this. There's a guy who is creating new console cases for the Dreamcast. It's causing a bit of a split, you know, a bit of a divide in the community about, you know, what they look like. Basically, this guy, he runs a company called TR Fight Stick based in Turkey. And he's created a range of fight sticks, as the name suggests, in the past, using a range of materials, wood, metal. They do look pretty good, to be honest, and by all accounts, they're actually really high quality. And now he's turned his attention to the Dreamcast. And so what he's doing is he's creating a bespoke console case to replace our kind of yellowing and creaking old ones. And that you'll be able to put the innards of the Dreamcast into, and it just looks like a completely kind of enclosed unit. I believe the only downside to this is that it's only compatible with Dreamcasts that use an internal storage device to put the games on, because there's no way to put GE-ROMs into this thing without, you know, taking the bottom of the thing off again. Personally, I think it looks pretty cool. I like the style of it. It's very minimalist. It's made of metal. It's got a nice kind of etched Dreamcast swirl on the top of it. I believe he's going to be producing them in wood as well. Don't know how much of a fire risk that might be, putting, you know, things that have electricity coursing through them inside a wood cabinet, you know, with minimal kind of ventilation, but, you know, time will tell. I just wondered what you guys think.
It's been done before.
Oh, it was done with the was it
analog, Neo Geo.
That's stuff. It, yes. I stand corrected, yeah. But, yeah, any thoughts? One thing I will add as well is it's been done in collaboration with BH Bros, who are known for their kind of high-quality devices that they put out, that are handmade, high-quality, peripherals. So, any thoughts on these guys?
It's one of those. I mean, I think maybe because I'm a bit of a purist with the whole, you know, I do love having games and actually being able to buy discs and putting discs in. And as soon as I saw that wasn't part of the option, I just kind of thought, well, for me personally, and obviously it is only personal opinion, but it's completely pointless. Like, and plus, like, the look of a Dreamcast to me, it, like, you know, it really is a beautiful console. And I think like, just changing that for something that looks like, and again, like, you know, I'm sure that the guy's very, very good at what he does. I'm not being disparaging, but it looks a bit like a DVD player. For me, it's not something that I would want. But again, I can see if someone maybe isn't bothered about discs and everything's on GD, GDMU and stuff like that, maybe for those guys. But yeah, for me, definitely not.
I thought it looks like, if you've ever seen it, maybe Google it, like a Mac Mini, like the.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Really, I saw the picture. I was like, is that a Mac Mini? And then basically, obviously, it's not, because it's on the Dreamcast junkyard, and you don't talk about Macs. So.
Sometimes.
I agree with it being. I think it's probably the last of the best looking traditional consoles. I don't think there's been a better looking console since the Dreamcast. I think maybe the only one, actually no, because even the GameCube is of quite an acquired taste, shall we say, but that's probably the only other console that I would, you know, has that traditional almost toy-like visual appearance to it. So I totally agree. I wouldn't want to change mine at all. Even I like the shade of slightly off cream that mine's turned into, and I don't even want to use Tom's fantastic technique because my to whiten it, because my Dreamcast is my Dreamcast from when they launched, and I don't want to change it.
To be honest, mate, that technique the yellowing returns anyway after a while. So I mean, I'm not really
the truth comes out now, Tom. Honestly,
yeah, come on, it's been like 3 or 4 years now. You know what I mean? So. You know, and I do sit in front of my Dreamcast with a massive cigar blowing smoke all over them all day.
Just smoking like 80 a day.
Would buy
a Power Stone.
Yeah.
I think if you had more than one Dreamcast, it would probably be quite cool to have one of these as well. Yeah. But yeah. I just have the one, and I've got all these discs that I don't want to just have sitting on my shelf and not being used. So I'm probably similar to some of the other guys here, just... yeah, it's a cool novelty, I think, more than anything.
I kind of, you know, my point is it would be. Go ahead, Ross.
Oh my god, just talking over each other. Never mind. As it would be like for me, I've got two Dreamcasts on my side, one for GDMU and one for regular discs. I mean, it would be pretty cool to put like a GDMU in this and that HDMI mod and have it all in this shiny, more modern looking case. But then, at the same time, I've always liked like the iconic look of the consoles, of all my consoles. Like I've never been one to buy these limited edition consoles or change the cases or whatever, because I've always just preferred the iconic look. For example, I had a black GameCube and I ended up flogging it just so I could get a purple one, because that's how we all remember the GameCube. I've always just preferred the base iconic look of each console.
To sort of mimic what you said there, Ross, or rather mirror, I can see that this would have a market for people who maybe do have a GDMU installed in their Dreamcast and maybe have more than one. I totally see what you're saying. The Dreamcast is an iconic looking machine. That's what it looks like. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, you see a Dreamcast shell from a mile away, you know what it is. This new thing from TR Fightstick, it looks like you said, Lewis, it looks like a small form PC or something. However, if you do have multiple Dreamcasts and you do want something a little bit different, I can totally see the appeal. I guess it's just down to the individual kind of.
This would look quite nice to a super, like the Super NT or the Analog NT Mini and the new Mega SG and all these like modern clone consoles are coming out. It'd look quite cool in a more modern setup like that. But yeah.
You know, when I first saw the line, you know, about new Dreamcast cases coming along, I was really hopeful that actually, you know, someone might be out there just designing like replica PAL cases, because I was like, they crack. They just crumble to dust like Weetabix.
Josh Todd must have thousands of them.
Surely, yeah.
I was speaking to somebody online about this recently, right? Basically, the Josh Prod boxes that the cases, the games are coming in. They're new. They're not old stock. They're new. They've been remade. So I reckon he somehow got the molds for the game cases. Because if you have a look at them, they've got the seams down the sides that the actual Dreamcast games themselves, the official ones, don't have. So they are new. The new boxes that have been made by someone somewhere. Obviously, he won't tell me where, because obviously he's not going to give away his secrets for, you know, his success. But on that front, somebody must have molds for Dreamcast console shells as well. Why aren't we seeing a new range of different coloured, like multicolored console shells? If somebody had those molds and they could put them out at a decent, you know, price, I'd buy several to replace some of the sort of yellowing, stinking old Dreamcasts that I've got. You know what I mean?
I'm sure someone with the know-how can do it with a 3D printer now without the molds. I'm sure it's possible.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
I seem to remember reading an article somewhere. A while ago around the Atari Jaguar molds, and I think there was it may even have been Atari Age or somewhere like that, but somebody was talking about they'd had the original molds, but the cost to actually produce some was just, you know, ridiculous given the amount of potential interest that would be involved.
That was the Coleco Chameleon debacle. The Coleco Chameleon guy bought the molds off some guy, and that was his main selling point.
When
it's like, I haven't got a cop plan. I haven't got the hardware stored out. I haven't got the games, but I've got Atari Jaguar shells.
Because then they ended up saying, like, well, just produce the shells then, because you're going to sell more shells to people with Jaguars.
Yeah,
you are this, you know, shit heap of a console.
I don't even think it was a console. It just was an idea.
It wasn't cheap.
Yeah, I was actually speaking to him, the guy who actually owned the guy who was running the Cameco. What the fuck? Coleco Chameleon. About getting one of these translucent shells for my Jaguar, because I used to be quite heavily into the Jaguar collecting scene and that kind of thing, but I just decided against it eventually. What was I going to say then? Yeah, I mean, I wrote an article recently on the Dreamcast Junkyard. Like, say, basically, is there a market for Dreamcast? You know, a new range of Dreamcast aftermarket shells. I personally think there is, even though the community is a lot smaller than we probably think it is, or you know, people outside of it think it is. You know, if they were offering, even if it was Sega themselves, you know, here's a bright green like replacement shell, $14.99. Yeah, totally, £20 maybe. You know, even up to maybe like $29.99. I'd consider it.
Retro bit maybe retro bit with all the new stuff, but obviously, I mean, that may be grasping at straws.
Well, yeah, who knows? I mean, there could be things coming out down the pipeline that we don't know about. So, you know, we'll see what happens, I suppose. But yeah, it's an interesting topic, and I think there is definitely a market for it, regardless of how small it is. So, yeah. Cool. Okay, guys. I did put in the running order if there's anything else anyone wanted to talk about. Is there anything else anyone wants to discuss while we're here assembled?
Very quickly, Tom.
Cool. Go ahead, Mike.
I want to bring people's attention to my poor knowledge of Japanese will hinder me here slightly, but there's a Dreamcast Complete Guidebook being released on the 2nd of December in Japan. It's on PlayAsia, so you can get it from PlayAsia. I bought my copy, £20.
Is that old?
£20. Looks amazing. It's got loads of pictures. Dreamcast Gaga's really promoting it heavily on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It looks fantastic. It's going to feature every Dreamcast Japanese release, all limited editions, all VMUs, hardware. I would recommend people picking it up. There's two great Dreamcast books coming out now within a few months of each other. So it's going to be...
What's it called, Mike? I'm trying to find it now.
It's called the Dreamcast Complete Guidebook. That's actually what it's called.
Yeah, I was speaking to DC Gagger about this the other day on Twitter by Messenger, and he was saying that the guy who's actually running this, who's actually creating this book, he's a massive collector, a big fan of the Dreamcast.
Yes.
He seems like the real deal. It's not just like one of these like cash grab things where somebody comes along and goes, oh, the Dreamcast's quite popular, let's make a book about it. This guy's been like a collector from like sort of year dot, so... Yeah, it looks quite promising. I've seen some of the images that he's been tweeting out, and it does look pretty cool. A lot of like advertising materials as well, you know, for certain games, Japanese posters, all the different console variations. So yeah, it looks like it could be a good one. The only caveat for me is that it's all in Japanese, so I won't be able to read it. However, pictures and stuff look really cool. So yeah, I think I might be making a purchase.
I think a lot of these books, you end up as sort of coffee table books anyway, don't they? Where you just kind of pick up and flick through and look at the nice screenshots and things. I've got an N64 anthology, which is just exactly that. There's huge, lovely write-ups of everything, but I end up just flicking through the screenshots thinking back to playing the games when back in the day.
That's a great thing. I think the only obviously Hardcore Gaming 101 do their fantastic books, which are proper written ones. I'd love to see a Dreamcast one of them one day, but The Dreamcast Complete Guidebook, I think it's just the fact that there's so much rare stuff in it and stuff which we don't really see, and he's got the pictures into the book, so it looks like it's going to be a really interesting book.
Yeah, I'd really like to create a book like, you know, of like our kind of editorial pieces, you know, from the blog, but kind of like sort of slightly tailored so they don't include like links or whatnot. But I think it's just such a massive undertaking because there's so much content on the blog. We'd have to be really kind of... It'd take a lot to pick out the things that we would like to put into the book. Do you know what I mean? Or even just use them as a basis for new content, you know, for a book like that. But yeah, it's good that you mentioned Hardcore Gaming 101's books, because I've seen some of their stuff, and I think it was a Castlevania book they did, which is just phenomenal. There's the amount of detail and the artwork, etc. is brilliant. So yeah, food for thought. Cool. Okay. Any more?
Yeah, so before we go, 5 minutes, I'd like to for you all to cast your minds back 18 years ago to the winter of 2000. Dreamcast is a year old, because I have the November-December issue of Dreamcast magazine in front of me. Ooh. We're just going to have a quick look at what's going on. So according to HMV, anyone want to have any guesses as to what was in their top 10 in sort of November time?
Code Veronica, maybe?
Sorry, one more time. What year?
So this is 2000.
November 2000.
Well, it would have been probably Shenmue. You're talking October's data, I would guess.
Yeah, I'm going to say Code Veronica. Is that out yet?
It's not in the chart.
Shenmue wouldn't have been out yet. No. What would it be? I'm going to guess Sonic Adventure is still in there because I guess it was never out the charts.
This is going really badly, boys. It's not in
there. MSR must be there.
No. It's a really shitty chart. If you need an expression.
Okay.
Spirit Speed 937.
Dalmatians.
I'll give you. So the top of the chart is WWF.
Virtual Tennis. Virtual Tennis.
Not bad. Virtual Tennis number two. Thank you.
Three.
Number three was in the charts for months and it was utter shit.
Doesn't narrow it down.
Is it a soccer game?
Multi platform, published by Eidos.
Tomb Raider Chronicles?
Fighting Force 2.
No. Think shitter.
Fighting Force shitter than Fighting Force 2?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
That's difficult. I won't. Ooh.
Who wants to be?
Oh, I know. I was going to say, I can't think of the name. I can't think of the name of the game. The one where you're kind of like a cop, female cop running around the city. Really crap.
Urban Chaos.
I was
going to
say that.
Other games in the chart include Power Stone 2, brilliant game. Wacky Races, yes. I really like
great
that.
Game. Yeah.
Hidden and Dangerous.
Mm.
Yeah. Space Channel 5.
No.
International Track and Field, which I always forget was on Dreamcast. I don't know what, because that game is so synonymous with PlayStation for me, and growing up playing it as a kid on the PlayStation with a multi-tab, I just always forget that is on Dreamcast.
A few Konami games as well.
Correct, yeah. And then the last one is Crazy Taxi, was still hanging on. So from a review perspective, we'll see if we can guess the scores. The first one is Shenmue, that should be an obvious one.
There's official magazine.
Official Dreamcast magazine.
Yeah.
Ten out of ten. It is 10. Was that the only 10 they gave to anything?
It was the only 10, I believe. Maybe Soul Calibur? Maybe it was the only 10.
I think you might be right on Soul Calibur.
I did subscribe to it. Either Soul Calibur and Shenmue or just Shenmue. I can't remember any others.
I wasn't rich enough to get the official Dreamcast magazine. I slummed it with DC UK and Dreamcast magazine. I was keeping it real.
I wasn't a subscriber, but I bought them every month. Official Dreamcast magazine and the Dreamcast magazine.
Excellent.
And yeah, I think I went without lunch for a couple of days. School lunch.
Don't try and go back.
I'm poorer than you. I was poorer than you.
I always used to get the.
I had one bed in my house between five siblings.
It was always the official PlayStation magazine for me, and then obviously it was natural to go onto the official Dreamcast because I couldn't live without the demo every month. Because at that age you'd have like one game every 3 months if you were lucky. So it was you lived off demos. But the other thing was CVG magazine used to compliment it really nicely for me because it was like a quid or something, or like £1.20 or something like that.
Well, it was cheap, wasn't it? It was like 99p at one point, I think.
I used to love CVG as well. It was really one of my favorite magazines growing up. Next up is Jet Set Radio.
Nine.
No, it's an eight.
Ooh,
really?
I was wondering eight. I don't know, because I think like it's an amazing game, but I guess it does have kind of some awkward. Sometimes the controls could be quite awkward. I was thinking what could knock it down, so I was thinking eight or nine. So
they've. I need to pick up a copy of that actually, because they've just relaunched all the leaderboards and everything on that on DreamPie. Yeah. So
I've got two copies, mate. So if you want one,
mate, there you go. Put one aside for me, Tom.
Yeah,
for next
we'll
weekend.
Do. No worries.
Ready to rumble, boxing round two.
I'm going to seven.
Eight.
Seven.
Eight.
It's an eight. Well, it's not as good as Jet Set Radio, so that's silly.
They should write a book, Mike, with every game reviewed, I think.
Yeah.
Some
be crazy.
Some sad bastard should do that.
Cheers, Mick.
The next game is one of Tom's favourites, if not your favourite Dreamcast game from memory. Le Mans 24 Hours.
Nine.
Seven. I'm gonna go for.
Seven.
I remember that being reviewed. Wait,
I remember the review. Don't they do 24 Hours?
They allegedly did. They allegedly. I do.
I'm going to go for an eight.
Yeah, it's
eight.
I'll
go seven.
They do. You are right, Mike. They do a 24-hour race. I'm not one to call foul on things when I've got no evidence, but I'm not entirely convinced they stayed up for 24 hours playing the game.
They didn't.
They gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Difficult learning curve and handling can raise a few eyebrows, being the only down points. Okay, next up we have Silent Scope.
Six.
Yeah, six.
I really liked Silent Scope. I thought that was such a good game. I mean, granted, in the arcade it was much more enjoyable with an actual sniper rifle in your hands. Mm. But
Did anyone play the Xbox version with the actual light gun you could get that was a sniper rifle?
No, it was in my local arcade in Dawlish. I played it there. It's great in the arcade.
They gave Silent Scope a 7.
Ooh, what?
Yeah.
No, it's a 6.
I'm pretty sure it's a 6, Mike.
I do love when you see, it's always the problem, of course, of reviewing games using scores. I love it when you see the score and then you look at some of the pluses and minus points they give on it. And obviously they give it a 7, which is a really good score. And then one of the bullet points is basic and repetitive, which doesn't sound like a great thing.
Does sound like Silent Scope, though.
It does sound like Silent Scope, absolutely. Next up, we have Gigawing.
3.
Oh, that's bad.
I gave
4.
It
bad. I can't remember. But
I'm going for
3 or 4. Yeah, I'm going to go for 4.
Poor graphics, slow down, too many continues, unavoidable death, 3 out of 10.
Oh, heartbreaking.
Another unremembered Dreamcast game, I would say, forgotten Dreamcast game, Star Wars Episode I Jedi Power Battles.
It's a PS1 port, isn't it? It was crap as well.
It's a mediocre.
5.
6,
yeah.
5.
I'm going to go for 5.
6. When the most positive thing they can say, to be fair, this is probably true of a lot of Star Wars games, is it's Star Wars. The negative thing is it's Phantom Menace. Dodgy collision detection, repetitive and frustrating, again. Glitchy graphics, and a ODM rating of 4 out of 10.
Wow. Harsh.
That magazine was just really harsh on a lot of 2D games, especially the Capcom 2D games, the beat-em-ups and the shmups.
Yeah, I think that was a generational thing, though. I think if you look back, the N64, it had some brilliant games that were 2D, and I think they got slated because it was kind of like, well, things need to be 3D now because we're into this generation.
Yeah.
Looney Tunes Space Race.
7. Right. Hang on.
8.
Yeah.
8.
This is one of my favorite racing games of all time. Like, it sounds stupid, but I was obsessed with this growing up. I'm going to go 10. No, I'm joking. 8.
7.
8. I'm going for 8.
A little too easy in places. Not a great deal of variety. Can be frustrating.
Yeah.
Seven out of ten.
There
we go. Harsh.
You're saying that one's harsh. Magforce Racing.
1.
Oh.
Is that what you gave it, Mike?
I gave it 2, I think.
I will say 4.
I've got no idea.
It's the most boring wipeout clone ever.
Apparently, once you get quite far into it, when the speed gets better, it actually improves the game, but I've not really put that much effort into it because
you'd have to be masochistic to get that far, though.
Yeah, totally.
So they've got a little thing here where they put in 1 hour what they've managed to achieve, and on this one it says in 1 hour we're already bored. they said it was deeply unoriginal, repetitive, and soon becomes boring.
Magforce Racing can be summed up by having a fridge magnet and putting it around a scale electrics track. That is how the game plays.
Isn't it?
I wish you were around reviewing games in like.
Yeah.
It's a PS1 port. It's a PS1 port of Killer Loop, I believe.
3 out of 10, and the best thing they could say to it was reasonable visuals. And yes, Tom, you're right. However, you didn't buy a Dreamcast to play a glorified version of a 5-year-old PlayStation game.
This is true.
The best thing they could say is that it's actually not Spirit of Speed Light 37. That's actually the best thing they could say.
A couple more left. Another fantastic 2D beat 'em up, Street Fighter 3, Third Strike.
Bad. It's going to be bad. I think it's lower than that.
I think they liked that one. That was one they liked.
Did they?
They didn't like Double Impact, did they?
Was it? I can't remember.
I can't remember which one.
I'm going to go low. I'm going to go 6. 5 or 6.
7.
7,
yeah.
Yeah,
go
seven.
On, 8. An 8.
Oh,
wow. they were quite high on it. Perhaps not
Jet Set Radio, then,
It's actually a really good port, really good game, but I for some reason, I remember them giving it a bad mark, but maybe I'm thinking of the other Dreamcast magazine.
Next up, and the final review this month, which is, I actually received this game for Christmas this year, so 2000. It had just come out, and it was probably one of my most played Dreamcast games. And I don't know, I always thought it was much better than it got reviewed. But anyway, it's Super Runabout, San Francisco edition.
Oh,
5?
6.
So the uppers were lots of vehicles, huge 2 scenarios and bonus levels, lots of longevity, handling is fun, handling is painful in other cars, no multiplayer, and a bit too short.
Yeah.
Any advances?
I'd go up, I think, up from 6. I'd go for 7.
It's a 6.
Mm.
You weren't a million miles off, though, boys. You're pretty good. But I did want to just say one thing from this magazine that I was laughing at reading the previews. And it's in reference to a Dreamcast game that's particularly rare, one of probably the rarest, if not the rarest PAL game, Moho.
Mm-hmm.
And where is it? I put a highlight on what the quote from this magazine about it. Where's it gone? Talk amongst yourselves for one moment. I can't find it now, but they basically said, they were saying something like how good it looked like it was going to be, and it was going to be a fantastically original, super duper new release for the Dreamcast, and it turned out to be absolute tripe.
See, I quite like Moho.
Really?
Yeah, well, I say like. I like it in the same way I like the Car 18. It's like sort of, there's an interesting sort of element to it.
The jank.
It doesn't really work, but yeah, it's better than Ducati World anyway. So
yeah. I found the quote. They said it's going to add a touch of class to proceedings.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah.
speaking of Ducati, I'm interested to know where we stand on this issue. Which is worse, Ducati or Spirit of Speed?
Oh, Ducati. Wow.
Ducati.
I go for Ducati. Ducati.
The only thing I would say is that when we were at a play, me and Kev, who was also there, we didn't mention Kev was there. Well, Kev was at the play. We were watching, and there was a mother with a young son, and the only like console that was free was the one with Spirit of Speed, and you could just see the face of this child. All life and energy was drained from him, whilst the mother just said. And also, Spirit of Speed killed the console. The only console that reset died over the entire 2 days was the one with Spirit of Speed. It refused to play any game after.
Yeah, so we had to just like put that one out of commission, didn't we? Like that one's off.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was quite a juxtaposition because it was right next to the divers. So we had the divers there, like the pinnacle of like Dreamcast collecting, next to Spirit of Speed 1937. And it was just like, what a comparison.
See, I think, this is possibly because I used to play a lot of sim racing games, which by their very nature aren't particularly, quote, fun and pick up and play. Like, I think if you changed a few things in Spirit of Speed, like, you know, reduce the amount of laps, you know, reduce the harsh realism. Fuck off. I don't think it's as bad as people make out it is.
Oh, it is.
With Spirit of Speed, it's the only racing game ever where the developers didn't think that steering was really, you know, a big deal to do with the game.
Yeah.
Never done a racing game like it.
I think they were just a bit too, they were a bit too honest with their source material, to be honest with you. It was, maybe they could have taken a few artistic liberties when it came to...
Some of the cars they included, like, you know, I know that Gran Turismo games always have that, like, you know, sort of the 1 mile an hour old car, sort of novelty. but that's like one of the actual cars in the Sphere Speed game, because it's a ridiculous car. And you go on a race, it's like 10 laps of an oval. It takes like 5 hours to complete the race.
Yeah, that's the thing. The race, like the race lengths and stuff are stupid. Yeah.
I quite like the way that the frame rate dips horrendously when you like go onto the grass. You know what I mean? It's quite realistic how it goes to like maybe 3 frames a second if you actually touch the grass.
And the car spins round and it's missing animation. So when it spins round, you sort of have this like janky. It's not a great game.
Anyway, let's put an end to this this torture talking about Spirit of Speed 1937. Unless of course you are James, who loves it.
That's going to become my thing now, and I'm going to be like the guy that likes Spirit of Speed.
Cool. All right, guys.
Dream Pod, for real. All your Spirit of Speed news, although, aren't they?
Yeah. I'd like to thank, first of all, Ross's squeaky chair for its appearance once again on the podcast. I'd also like to thank everybody else who's here, who's joined me on this afternoon. And also to you, the listener, for deciding to press play or download wherever you get your podcasts from. Obviously, we wouldn't do this if nobody listened. So thank you. And I think that's going to do it for this podcast, really. This is going to be a really long kind of outro because there's so many of us talking about where you can find us on the internet. But you can find myself on Twitter at Tom Leesey. You can find us all as a collective at the DC Junkyard. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Dreamcast Junkyard. Facebook groups is just the Dreamcast Junkyard. I think we're close to 15,000 members now, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Guys, where can you be found? We'll start with Mark. We'll start with you first.
Yeah, so the main place to find me really is on YouTube. So it's Maz, which is M-A-Z Gaming UK, because a lot of people seem to think that I'm saying Mass. Just to clarify, and we are also on Twitter as well, so that's at Maz Gaming UK.
Fantastic. And Lewis, what about yourself?
You can find me at LewisJFC on Twitter. My other website where I write my thoughts is altmaguk.net. I've got a few articles coming up there. I'm still faithful to the Dreamcast Junkyard, though, don't worry. And so just find me there. If you go on the Altmag site, all the social media for that's there as well. So just follow it through on there.
Fantastic. Yep,
that's where you'll find me.
Excellent. James, what about yourself?
Just for general gaming ramblings amongst other groans and moans on Twitter at Agile Harvey.
Excellent. Mike?
My Twitter is at @space_turnip.
Fabulous. And Ross, where can we find you? What's your full address?
If I don't already know you, I don't really know you.
Ross will find you.
Excellent. Okay, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Dream Pod. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.